Hello, good morning, everyone. This is Simone, and I just unmuted myself. So thank you, Carrie, for reminding me. It is Monday, November 13th, 2023, and we are meeting as our weekly community group meeting of the Verifiable Credentials in Education Task Force. Thank you, my fellow former co-chair, Carrie, for reminding me of unmuting. As most of you know, we go through a few housekeeping items before jumping in today's main topic. So let's do that. IP note. These calls are open for everyone to join. However, if you are planning to make any substantial contribution to this work items, you need to be a member of W3C, the credentials community group. That is free and easy to do. You just have to open up a W3C account. There is a link in the email that you received with the agenda. And then take a look at the contributor license agreement there. Moving on to call notes. We are recording these meetings and sharing minutes with participants and the wider community. We also archive everything on our website if you want to go back and catch up. To keep things ordered and facilitate the conversation, we use the chat. If you want to get on the queue, just type Q+ in the chat and add what is that you want to ask about, or simply raise your hand by clicking the button on the Jitsi interface. Great. That gets us to introductions or reintroductions. This is where we ask newcomers to our group to introduce themselves quickly, or old friends that are back with us to reintroduce themselves. So anyone willing to say hi today?
Kina, I came in a year ago to give presentation on EPSI and completely disappeared because it's at 6 p.m. our time and I usually am cooking and I forget. Today I remember to come. So thought I'll say hello.
Thank you, Sheila. Great to have you back with us. Yep, you got your priorities straight. The timing of this call is certainly not friendly for every time zone, but thank you very much for being back here and for continuing to do the great work that you do.
I will try to come for all as many meetings as possible from now.
Great.
Okay, if you can just jump in, I'm Ildi Komazar. Hello. So almost the same situation as Sheila. I have a small child who usually comes back from school at around this time. So up until now, I've been just informed by my dear colleague, Anthony Camilleri, about what was going on in the group. But I am very happy to be here today and look forward to speaking a little bit more later on. Oh, I'm representing the European Learning Model, the European Digital Credentials for Learning.
Thank you, Ildiko. All right, I see most familiar faces in the participants, so let's move forward with announcement and reminders. There's a lot happening in our space. I wonder if someone wants to share particular things that this community should be aware of, and if so, please go ahead. All right, I'll share a quick news that it's not super news right now, but you may have heard that the company known as Instructure has signed final agreements to acquire Parchment, the company that I work for. That is an intention to complete the acquisition that has to go regulatory reviews. But it's definitely an exciting thing for the ecosystem and something to watch for in the future. I'll drop a link with all the available information for now. Okay, great. So why don't we jump into the main topic for today? It is, you've heard from her. It is great to have with us Ildikó Mázár, who's the PM for the European Digital Credential for Learning, the European Learning Model. She's been very active in working on some of the things that we have previously shared with this community, the European Learning Model, and everything around the European Digital Credential for Learning is one of the flagship initiatives of the European Commission regarding credentials for education. Therefore, it's of utmost interest for us here. And I'm super happy to welcome Ildikó today in our community and looking forward to have her stick around maybe in the future. And there is no better way of breaking the ice than to tell us a bit more about an exciting development in Europe, which is really focusing on accreditation validation. So without further ado, Ildikó, I'm going to turn the floor over to you. And thanks again for sharing with us.
Well, thank you very much for the warm welcome. And without further ado, I'm going to jump in and we'll share my screen. Caveat, you are by far the most professional audience I ever had to present these developments. So this is going to be fun. But also it's going to be great to be able to get your feedback and questions. I prepared a few slides and I will afterwards be able to just share code directly. But let's see what we have in our European Digital Credentials for Learning. We recently as last week, released the newest version of the EDC. It's the 2.2 version, which includes accreditation. But let me go back by 1.5 releases and tell you a little bit more about how we distinguish between on-site and site credentials, how we use the evidence property to describe accreditation and mandated issue, how we're using the HES claim VC property to group our claims, and how we use the display properties property to determine the visual representation of a credential, basically the face, the pretty face to the rest of the world and the more human type viewers of credentials. And then I have one slide about tiny user experience improvements. Just in case you are familiar with our tool, you will be able to see what little changes we have made. So first of all, this is just static images of the code highlighting how our unsigned credentials can progress to a signed version and where the signature gets included in the JSON code. Basically, when and if you have an unsigned credential that you can either build by using our online browser-based online credential builder, or if you know how to build a sender-compliant JSON credential, you can do it manually. Then we insert the issuer information directly coming from the seal. So as you can see on the screen, the on-site credential suddenly expands to being a signed credential containing a lot of information all coming from the seal. And this seal is also shown when you look at the signed credential and see the automatic and instant authentication and verification checks. It will show you that the credential was sealed by this organization whose information is coming from the seal. How we use the evidence property for accreditation, the next big thing. Like the highlighted title says, we are using the evidence property. This is a bigger thing because to be able to reference accreditation, of course, we also need to be able to get that data from a trusted source. For that, we are using our qualifications dataset register, which is a European database containing data about qualifications, learning opportunities, and accreditations. But basically, by allowing the creation of a cross-reference to reports or records in this accreditation database, the user establishes this relationship in the file. this is highlighted in red. And when the human looks at the in its final format, they will be able to consult the information about the accreditation reports in the EDC viewer. And as you might be able to see, I don't know how big your screens are, you can then click on a couple of the links to see further information about the accreditation report.
Illegal. Let me stop you for a second. I'm sorry. I know there's a question in the chat, and I wonder if it's something that you just addressed. So, Dimitri, please, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I'm also fine waiting to the end for questions. I was curious about what you meant by seal. Is it a digital signature? Are you using any of the verifiable credential variants, either JWT or JWLD based? So I'm just not familiar with this notation.
Okay. Sure. Sorry. Yeah, I took it for granted. Basically, we need to do is use eIDAS compliant electronic seals, which are the digital equivalent of the institution's rubber stamp. These have to be institutional signatures, if you like. And they need to be either qualified or advanced. And the reason why they have to be eIDAS compliant is that our credentials are recognizable across the EU. Basically, for credential portability and transparency, we need to be able to make these credentials acceptable across the EU member states. If somebody from Spain is applying for a job in Belgium, the Belgian prospective employer needs to be able to discern for sure that this organization issuing this credential is a legitimate party, and this is proven by this electronic seal that is given to the user by a so-called trust service provider. I would have to look into the various types of seals that we accept. I'm not technical enough to know the difference between the LTs and TLAs and or whatever you call them, but I would be more than happy to look this up for you if you need further information. Does this answer your question?
Thanks, yes.
And thank you, Simona, for translating, because I don't have the chat in front of me. I'm blinded by the screen that I'm sharing, so please interrupt me at any time.
I will. Thank you. You may go on. Thank you, Ilika.
Thank you very much. So briefly, I described how the accreditation function works. Not all our credentials are accredited. This is a special type that we introduced recently. Until now, we allowed the issuance of generic credentials. From now on, people can issue accredited credentials, which adds this section to the credentials signature pane, which is this sub tab in the menu. And the information about the accreditation that you can retrieve from these accreditation records are about including information about the accrediting agent, about the decision, websites, if there are limitations to the jurisdiction or the qualification framework level or thematic area, etc. So lots of information that I'm not going to go into. But if you like, I am more than happy to share with you some signed and unsigned credentials that you can browse at your own pleasure and in your own pace. Still within the evidence property, we also have a so-called mandated issue. If an organization signs on behalf of somebody else, which is often the case in Luxembourg, all the qualification awards are issued by the Ministry of Education. So even though the awarding body would be a university or a vocational education and training provider, the issuing organization would be the ministry. And this can be distinguished, these two roles within the metadata using the evidence section of the code. So as you can see here, this would include an evidence statement. Needless to say, earlier you would have in the code the reference to the two types of the credential. In this case, this credential is generic as well as issued by mandated issue. And every time a third-party user opens a credential for viewing, they will be able to see information about the sealing organization and an evidence statement that is often complemented by signed agreement documents about the mandate and a personalized evidence statement that would say why and how the sealing organization signs on behalf of the awarding body. So this is just, once again, a little snippet of the code. And if there are no questions about this part, we can just move on to how we use the HasClaim property. Basically, we are using a HasClaim property to express all the claims, group of claims, nested claims. We also have relationships, potential relationships between certain claims. An achievement, a learning achievement, could be influenced by learning activities. You have to take a course in order to prove the acquisition of certain learning outcomes. And your achievement can also be proven by an assessment. But any one of these claims could be either a supporting claim to an achievement or an individual high-level claim, in which case the HAS claim would just be an assessment or an activity or entitlement claim.
Ildiko, we have another question.
Thank you.
Dimitri, go ahead.
Thanks. What's the difference between proven by and evidence?
Okay, the evidence is evidence for the credential, and the proven by here is just a linked claim to a higher level achievement claim. The way I can translate it is that, let's say you're taking a course, what is this here, the digital micro-credential creation achievement. This claim basically states that you are able to create digital micro-credentials. How can you create this? Because you sat through a course, and because at the end of the course, you have submitted an artifact that was assessed by an expert, and they give you a pass. And in this case, the digital micro-credential creation achievement is our main claim. And this claim is influenced by another so-called subclaim, which is the activity, and proven by another subclaim, which is the digital artifact assessment. But like I said, if you are only sitting through a course, for example, this meeting, I could issue you a credential just for an activity without any reference to learning outcomes or assessments, and just claim that you have completed an activity.
I see. And so, that's an example of supporting information for the claim. So what is evidence used for then?
The evidence is used to evidence the accreditation status of a credential, like we said earlier here, or the evidence that the credential was issued by not the awarding body, but by a mandated party. So these evidences are outside of the credential claims and the subject. You can probably tell here that the credential subject is described here. This is a lot of code. And after this, you would have an evidence section to the credential that will detail aspects about accreditation and, the mandated issue.
I see. That's very interesting. So part of the reason that that I'm asking about evidence is that in the current Verifiable Credentials 2.0 working group, there is an ongoing argument about what exactly is evidence for. And usually it's used for things that the two properties that you've shown in HasClaim, the proven by and specifically proven by. But the use case that you're using evidence for, linking to, I guess, the accreditation artifact or something, that's a new usage that we should bring to the working group. So I appreciate you explaining.
I believe that one of the reasons why we also had to use a somewhat more granular cluster of information to describe assessment, which if you like, it could be evidence. I have a sample credential that I can pull up later, but probably won't have time. Is the proven by claim itself, which is the assessment, could be further detailed in terms of who made the assessment, which may or may not be the same organization that is the awarding body of the claim or the issuer of the credential, what grading scheme has been used, what grade the person has achieved, what kind of ID verification or supervision has been used, type of assessment, mode of assessment, lots of other structured information or data that evidence in itself couldn't cover. And we also have properties of the assessment and assessment specification that we use for this purpose that would allow linking to or referencing evidences in terms of like theses or documents or artifacts by using either additional note or external document references. Onwards. I'm mindful of the time, but I don't have very much else to say, and this was probably the most interesting part. So how we use images to have some kind of a face to our credentials, we use a display parameter property or class, if you like, which could contain individual displays, and this could be a multi-page visual representation of a credential. There are lots of documents, standardized documents, at least in Europe, for example, diploma supplement that are multi-page documents. We want to make sure that traditional credential issuers are able to create something that would have a public or human-facing look and feel that would look very similar to the traditional paper-based credentials, but at the same time, the underlying metadata would be highly structured and customizable. So this display parameter would allow the users to either just include individual displays as images, and these then would be just Base64 images, image codes, or they can do custom HTML to reference data from the credential. For example, this would be the title of the credential. This is the name of the credential holder. This is the grade of the assessment that the person achieved. And these are all our EDC issuer would convert all this information using Thymeleaf code and convert them into a Base64 credential image that is in turn displayed as the face of the credential. And of course, these could be multilingual as well. You can not see here, but the credential display or summary image, as we call it, if the user provides the information in multiple languages, then this could be translated to any of 29 languages that currently we support. Language is a big deal in Europe. We have lots of them. And that's basically it. I think I'm just going to skip the little things unless anybody is interested, and let's just take further questions if there are any.
Thank you, Ulrico. In your short presentation, I've already collected a few interesting threads that are worthwhile exploring in this community. And just for our own collective reminder, one was around the e-seal or the signatures that are that exist in the European digital credentials. And to some extent, I think there is part of that response answer might be found in the way e-signatures are also used within the EBSI. There is some documentation that I shared, particularly around the JADES standard. But again, one thread to go back to. The other one was disambiguating the term evidence and maybe writing up how is evidence interpreted in the European digital credentials and how, for example, that term is used in the open badges specification. Also, the rendered map, way we are, you know, adding a visual layer to this verified data. That is something that, as Dimitri pointed out, there is an interesting new thread on a proposal for that. So compare notes would be important. And I guess going back to the question, how do, say, Open Badges version 3 being verifiable credential play possibly in a connected tissue role between European digital credentials and the work that is happening around verifiable credentials. Those were just some of my notes. I wonder if anyone has more reflections or things to add. Dimitri.
Thanks. I'm feeling self-conscious that I'm the only one asking questions. But my question is, can you tell us a little more about how the EIDAS standards are created? Well, I'm noticing a lack of conversation between the EIDAS schemas and either W3C's Verifiable Credential Group or the new Verifiable Credential Groups at IETF. So I'm just wondering, like, to those of us not familiar with the EIDAS format, how do the specs get created? Are there public meetings? Is there a repository for the specifications? Thanks.
This is as far as my technical expertise stretches. So I would, if you don't take it the wrong way, I would much prefer to go back to my team and compose a proper reply, and get back to you with some contextualized information about the seals, because this.
Wait. The question is not about the seals. It's more about what's the general process of creating this EIDAS specification. Does that make sense? Does the question make sense?
If I may jump in here, I think, you know, being partly responsible, if only because I'm also here in Europe, and Dimitri, you're picking up on a very important aspect of this whole ecosystem. And so, you know, what is the process for creating, you know, privacy regulations in Europe, and how does that get factored in or inform the development of technical standards? Yeah, so that's a big question, and I think it's one of the moving parts that has been, you know, providing directions to, you know, how the ultimate, you know, technological solution that are delivered comply with, you know, these big frameworks. I tend to think that this is, as I know, the European Digital Credential, you know, work is, you know, happening in a different team, and the, you know, the way this has been addressed, or to answer your question, may lie elsewhere. That said, I think it's, you know, we want to kind of keep all the dots connected, and this feels like it's exactly the kind of prompt to keep Ildikó engaged with this community, and maybe we can ask her to point us, maybe if she can follow up with an answer, or even better, maybe get us someone that we can invite, and they can tell us all about it. Ildikó, would you be, you know, comfortable in working with us in finding, like, an answer to this question, which is critical? Maybe also we can work together in finding who would be the right person to have this call. And this is actually an open question for anyone here today. I think Dimitri's call needs answer. So that is a good prompt for us to do some homework on.
Sure, most definitely. And in the meantime, I posted the a link in the chat. This will not answer all your questions, but hopefully that gives you a little bit of context.
Excellent, thank you. I have a question, Ildikó. So we've hosted colleagues from the European Blockchain Service Infrastructure before around the use case diploma. Could you help us understand what is the relationship or, you know, the touch points, sort of the Venn diagram between the diploma use case in MC and the work that is happening at the European Digital Credentials?
Well, this is for a while, it's been an ongoing consultation between the two initiatives, how we can combine our strengths. Needless to say that the EPSI project is a very innovative technology focused project with the blockchain. Our initiative that is already a functional public facing combination of tools and services. This is already working in production, and there are multiple implementers across the EU and outside who are issuing these verifiable credentials, European digital credentials for learning. We are also driven by policy directives. For example, the diploma use, particularly the diploma use case, is that institutions are have the obligation to issue these diplomas to learners, i.e. the first bottleneck, if you like, is that these credentials have to be issued by the credential issuers, whether or not they are requested by their recipients. So there goes the first point of discussion, where we will have to figure out how we can fulfill the mandate of these credential issuers, as well as look into and appreciate the self-sovereignty and the rights of the learners. Once again, these are ongoing discussions. The one thing I can say is that the spirit is collaboration and integration and interoperability. So it's not like, I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but the person whom I'm not putting on the spot will recognize themselves. It's not that we are making anybody to choose between these two initiatives. And so far, our experience is that there are institutions, organizations who are exploring the benefits of both projects, and then they assess for themselves which is the one that they would like to invest more or less time and effort.
Sheila, go ahead.
Thanks.
I'm not sure I'm the person who was supposed to be on the spot, but from ECIU University, we, Tampere University and another partner did do EPSI, and that's what the presentation we gave last year. We also did an early adapter program with European Digital Credentials. If you ask for a Venn diagram, I would say the data model is the common part in both of them. Both of them use the same data model. So it's easy to think about interoperability, but when it comes to the other technologies like blockchain versus this, and we, even when we were doing the EPSI early adopter program, the first feedback we sent out to them is that for diplomas, this might work, but if we are issuing micro-credentials, you know, verifiable credentials for short learning experiences or things like that, this won't work, because every time expecting the student to request a credential is not going to work. Students forget, and at the end of it, when they need it, they will remember, and it is it's just not, the minute they finish, just traditionally everybody got used to when they finish something, they get the credential to into their hands, whether it's paper, whether it's a PDF, whether it's an email or anything. So I think that that model works, and it has to be that. So till that changes, at least for micro-credentials, EPSI is going to be a harder sell. And also there were other issues as well. I actually wrote a paper on this, on EPSI and adoption of EPSI. One of the things is, because it requires a node, every if institution that's wants to use it, there needs to be a, or at least they're recommended to have a node within that country, because you do need multiple nodes to work in the blockchain, which requires it, basically a national strategy to install a node and maintain the node. And there are GDPR issues you have to take care of at the node itself as well. So a university or an institution cannot just decide saying, okay, I'm going to use EPSI. It requires a lot more planning and a lot more entities involved before it can happen. But with European Digital Credentials, you know, it's it's a platform. We are all very familiar with the platforms. And right now, CIU University decided to use European Digital Credentials and EDC platform to issue micro-credentials.
Thank you, Sheila. This has been a question that has been running, right? And sometimes the way I have personally framed it, at least in the past, is the European Digital Credential was always very much focused on the semantic layer, on building also the ontologies to express different types of learning. ILDICO is also involved in the European Learning Model ontology, whereas the EPSI use case diploma really focused on the envelope layer, you know, the transport, adding security and privacy. And so there is a complementarity of the two efforts. In addition to that, the European Digital Credential infrastructure was always, I mean, from the get-go, looking at verifiable credentials as the data model. So I'd say two converging initiatives that are in a different maturity stage right now and that may have, I guess, different use cases that they are addressing.
Different use cases for both of them. Like I said, for diplomas, you know, students might not mind requesting for it, but for micro-credentials, it would be hard to sell.
Great. I wanted to go back to the, ILDICO, go ahead.
I didn't want to interrupt you, but something that you said as well, I think is important, reiterating that the mature service and infrastructure that we are providing is already usable. And because our ontology and the European learning model is about so much more than credentials, it describes accreditation, it describes learning opportunities, qualifications, and this provides users with a readily available wallet service as well that is usable for individuals to store all kinds of credentials independent from their source, mode, or size. So that seems to be very appealing to the citizens of Europe to be able to just either deposit or upload these various different types of credentials. And as lifelong learners, they are expected to gradually get more of different types of credentials from different issuers. And it's basically just a convenience for them to be able to store everything in one free place where they can share them as well.
Thank you. Dimitri, go ahead.
Thanks. My question is for ILDICO about the micro-credentials and students requesting them. What about the push workflow that the either email notifications or the credentials themselves would automatically be sent to students at the end of the class? I guess my question is why the emphasis on the pull method, the students requesting, and not just, hey, the credentials are available to them?
Oh, we actually push. So that's the point that in our use case, the issuer, since most of the times this is their legal obligation anyway, to if a student enrolls in a degree program, the student expects to receive a degree at the end of their studies, the degree program, and then the issuing organization has the obligation to send these credentials. So these issuing organizations can send the credentials either by direct wallet deposit in case the learners already have a standard compliant wallets. These can be the Europass wallet that is a freely available wallet or incorporated into the issuing organization's own student information system or learning management system or their own infrastructure, or by email, in which case the person would receive an email notification with the JSON file attached to the email, and they can store that credential either offline on their computer, or they will also have instructions in the email how they can open a free wallet where they can start collecting these. So it's absolutely that method.
Makes sense. So why doesn't that apply to micro-credentials?
It does. It applies to all our credentials. I think the comparison Sheila has made was between EPSI that does require the request from the credential recipient versus our service, the European Digital Credentials for Learning, where the issuer is the agent who sends the credentials. Granted that once the issuer sent the credential, it is solely the property of the credential holder, and the issuing organization no longer has any ownership over them. So when the user needs a certified copy, they don't have to contact the issuing organization. They have the certified copy or the original in their wallet or on their hard drive.
Thank you. Thank you all. I did have a question for Ildikó going back to the accreditation topic. And who do you expect would be early adopters of accreditation in Europe?
Well, our first adopters is the DECAR, or the I don't know if you are familiar with ECHAR, which is the European Quality Assurance Register for Higher Education. These are a European initiative to collect standardized data on accreditation across Europe. And because they are already using ELM to document these records, and they have a very large database of accreditation reports, they contribute that data set to our accreditation database in the Qualification Dataset Register, which is our accreditation database. And our system is able to establish this cross-reference. Member states can also contribute. Usually these accreditation records are submitted or contributed on a national level, member state level, by an authorized representative of the country. And this is also so far the key to reliability of the information. But this system is evolving, and we are currently piloting what we call the delegation option. So these member state representatives can delegate data provision roles to other member state representatives based on whatever processes they find necessary to do this. Did this answer your question more or less?
Yes, thank you. I was expecting that DECAR might be one, and in fact, for everyone's benefit, DECAR could be framed as a trusted registry. So for our community, this would bring up the question: is so how are you building the trusted registry? Which is certainly top of mind for many people in this community, and the approach to building this trusted registries varies in the community, and it's just a vibrant space, I would say. I don't know if anyone here wants to jump in and add any comments. Sheila?
So as far as I know, most of the European universities are part of this DECAR or ECHAR. DECAR is database of ECHAR. Every country has the quality assurance education ministry that goes through all the universities within the country and assess the quality and everything. And then they submit this report to the ECHAR to make sure that, you know, all the universities within a country are following the European quality standards. This year, I actually happened to be one of the people giving the review for our own university for the country. And I was asking them, how long does it take to get this report to ECHAR? And they said they are going to combine all the universities, and it takes about 3 months to send it to ECHAR. And I already see that it's updated because our university, two universities got combined into one. Before last year, both of them were there separately. And I was getting worried that when we issue micro-credentials, I need that to be one university so that, you know, we can use from DECAR directly into the micro-credential. And that's every 2 years or every 3 years, every country goes through this quality assurance process and then make sure that it follows the European standards.
May I jump in? Because I think, Sheila, you just raised a very important point as well that we needed to take into consideration, that even higher education institutions that are meant to be robust go through changes, mergers, splits, name changes, etc. So to work with the so-called trusted list of issuers is not as straightforward as some might believe. And thanks to these databases and thanks to the long-time validity and re-signing credentials and checking the accreditation status of an institution at the time of issuing a credential, these are delicate small points that need to be nailed. Otherwise, there could be holes in the system. And this is something that we have considered, and indeed we have the mechanism to make sure that nobody falls off the chart or out of our trusted list.
Thank you. What is emerging here in the call is the need for us to convene one of our weekly calls around the relationship between EPSI, EIDAS, and the European learning model. So that's an additional reason why we need to keep you in the loop, both Ildikó and Sheila. Thank you for animating this debate. It's really important. And as you can see, the optics from from outside of Europe are not always clear. But there's a genuine interest in maintaining, keeping track of the developments and seeing how all the different moving parts can talk to each other. Okay. I don't see any other questions in the queue. Maybe this is a good time to kind of close the call. Just a reminder, our group, the co-chairs, the original co-chairs, Dimitri, Carrie, and myself are now down to two. So Carrie has stepped aside, but she's still very actively involved. So we are looking for a co-chair of this particular task force. So look forward for a communication, a reminder about that. We want to open up these opportunities to any members of our community that wants to jump in and support this amazing group. It's been such a fun ride in the last few years, and so I would strongly recommend anyone here to consider it. So again, heads up, watch for an additional reminder and instruction on how that process is going to unfold. I wonder if, Dimitri, you have anything else you wanted to add?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Simone, for giving a summary of the topic. So, yeah, the TLDR, we're going to be holding elections shortly. So we're going to be doing a call on the mailing list for nominations for candidates who want to be a co-chair to tell us about themselves. And then we'll hold a ranked choice election. That's it. So start thinking about it. Start thinking who you want to nominate. If you're interested in being a co-chair, please reach out to us on the list or directly through email, and we'll walk you through the process. Thanks.
Thank you, Dimitri. All right, folks, that's all for today. Grateful to Ildikó for sharing with us, and we'll look forward to see you next week or in the near future. Have a good rest of your day. Bye.